Welcome to today's episode of In Conversation With, the official podcast of The Lancet Global Health. I'm Georgia Bisbass, and it's March 2024. Today, I'm joined by Kathy Baisley from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine and Dr. Ruan Barnabas from Massachusetts General Hospital. We discussed their recently published article, which compared the dose reduction, immunobridging and safety study in Tanzania, the DORIS trial, and the Kenya single-dose HPV vaccine efficacy trial, the KenSHI trial. Both of these trials looked at the HPV vaccine in young women and girls. I began by asking Ruan why she chose to study the human papillomavirus and what the risks of it are to young girls.
One of the main reasons to study the HPV vaccine is because it is a near-perfect vaccine. It prevents almost 100% of HPV infections, and that is the infection that leads to cervical cancer. And in countries where we have high coverage of the HPV vaccine, we see almost no cases of cervical cancer. So we know that it works from randomized trials that led to licensure, and then many years, 15, 20 years down the line, we can see that it also prevents cervical cancer. It's marvelous. It prevents a disease that causes morbidity and mortality in midlife for women. And if we can prevent this with a simple intervention, we want to do everything we can to deliver the intervention. We also specifically wanted to study it in parts of the world where there's a very high burden for cervical cancer, specifically where coverage of vaccination is low and where screening for cervical cancer coverage is also low, because we know that it will have a big impact in the future if it's delivered broadly. Currently, the coverage for vaccines is globally is 15%, and we want 90% of eligible girls under the age of 15 vaccinated. So we have a big gap to fill in order to reach where we want to be, to have the kind of impact we want to have on public health to prevent cervical cancer. And maybe the last thing I'll say is that the World Health Organization has a big emphasis now on eliminating cervical cancer. It's incredible to think about, but countries like Australia are actually on track to eliminate cervical cancer as a public health problem. Given all the tools that we have, the World Health Organization has a big emphasis on eliminating cervical cancer, and we want to bring all the science, all the advocacy, all the work that we can do to support this effort.
And Kathy, and if I can come to you, in your trial, you've mentioned a technique called immunobridging. Could you explain a bit more for our audience precisely what immunobridging actually is?
That, for people who are not familiar with immunobridging, this is when we compare the immune response, so the antibody levels in one population, with those in another population where the vaccine has been shown to be protective. And so if the immune responses are similar, the antibody levels are similar, we use this then to infer that protection will be similar. So this is what we call immune bridging studies or immunobridging studies. So for HPV vaccine, the trials that showed that the vaccine protected against HPV infection and associated disease were done in young women aged 16 to 26. And since it's a sexually transmitted infection, the vaccine is targeted at young girls before they become sexually active. But if we wanted to evaluate efficacy in this group, you know, vaccine protection in this group of individuals who are vaccinated before they become sexually active, it would take a very long time of follow-up in order to observe the HPV infection or cervical disease endpoints. So for this reason, instead, we use immunobridging. It's a way to get evidence for the vaccine's protection. And I would also say that, so there's a strong biological rationale for this, because the protection conferred by HPV vaccine is primarily mediated by neutralizing antibodies. So we can use the antibody response, you know, to be comparing the antibody response in the young girls to those in the women in who we have demonstrated efficacy, and use that to infer efficacy in this younger population, to know that the vaccine will be equally efficacious, equally protective.
So for the current work, you're using data from one trial, the KenSHI trial in Kenya, to help inform the outcomes of a second trial in Tanzania. Could you explain a little bit about how these trials differed?
Great question. So this question is how we use data from the KenSHI study. And the KenSHI study is a randomized control trial that measured vaccine efficacy. And I'll just say a little bit about what that is. And so within the Kenshi trial, we were able to show that the vaccine prevents persistent HPV infection, which we understand is a precursor to dysplastic lesions and cervical cancer. So we know that the vaccine works with very high efficacy. We demonstrated 98% efficacy for the bivalent vaccine and 96% efficacy for the nonavalent HPV vaccine. So both studies used at the time the two available HPV vaccines, although now there are more that are available. So the Kenshi study was for women aged 15 to 20, because that is the age at which they acquire HPV infection, and we could show that the vaccine worked in that age group. But it is a older age than the group for whom the vaccine is provided to in public health programs. And then Kathy will tell you a little bit more about DORIS.
Yeah, so the DORIS, thanks, Ruan. And another thing that Ruan didn't mention, that Kenshi is the first randomized trial looking at the efficacy of a single dose. So all of our evidence that we had for the efficacy of a single dose before Kenshi came from observational studies of women who didn't complete their scheduled doses. So Kenshi is the first randomized trial of the single dose efficacy, and DORIS is the first randomized trial of the single dose in girls of the target age range for vaccination. So they're 9 to 14. Very few, almost none of the girls in the DORIS trial were sexually active at baseline. They were age 9 to 14. Whereas in Kenshi, I think that was one of the eligibility criteria, that they had to be sexually active. It wasn't a restriction for eligibility, but because of their young age, they were essentially none of them who were sexually active. And they're in the target age range. But the DORIS trial did not look at efficacy because, as the reasons I said, it would take so long, more than 10 years to look at efficacy in this age group because they haven't yet started sexual activity. So we just looked at immune responses and then compared these to the Kenshi trial and also to other studies where efficacy had been demonstrated with a single dose. The other thing that's different about DORIS is we also had two dose arms and three dose arms. We used the same vaccines as Kenshi, but we had one, two, and three dose arms of each vaccine so that we could also do within trial comparisons to look at whether you were having similar seropositivity rates with a single dose as with two dose or three dose. We knew antibody concentrations would be lower, the mean antibody concentrations, but we were wanting to show that the same number of girls became seropositive. So the same proportion of were seropositive so that we knew that the vaccine would be protective.
Just to build on what Kathy said, I think this is a great example how you need more than one study to answer multiple questions. Each study answered its specific questions. DORIS about immunogenicity for 9 to 14, and then the Kenshi study answered the question about whether the vaccine works clinically to prevent persistent HPV infection, and then taken together, the suite of evidence supports single dose as a strategy to prevent HPV infection and cervical cancer.
And so what were the final outcomes of the DORIS trial then?
So the final outcome in terms of the paper that has just been published, this was about the immunobridging to Kenshi, we did show that both HPV-16 and HPV-18, which were the two immune responses that we compared, that the antibody concentrations and the proportion who were seropositive at 24 months after a single dose in the DORIS trial, they were non-inferior. In other words, they were comparable to those that we saw in Kenshi in 24 months after women had received a single dose of those same vaccines in Kenshi. So we were able to demonstrate that the immune responses were the same in these young girls as they were in the young women in whom efficacy was demonstrated in Kenshi. And as I said, that was the first randomized trial to look at efficacy of one dose. So that's the gold standard for evidence. So we then bridged our immune responses in DORIS to this randomized trial that had rigorous evidence of efficacy. So this immunobridging provides the strongest available evidence of the potential efficacy of a single dose regimen in young girls. One limitation, though, is that it's based on a relatively short follow-up time. So this immunobridging was done at 24 months. Kenshi also found efficacy at 36 months, but we're following the DORIS participants for up to 9 years, We're actually presenting the 5-year data at the Eurogen conference next month. So we're to look at durability of the immune response because we want to know, do those antibody levels, do they stay at the level where they need to be when the girls, 10 years down the line, when the girls start becoming sexually active?
Great, thank you. You mentioned there about the potential efficacy and kind of how positive that was from the trial. So in light of your paper, the big question is, do you think immunobridging is an effective method to determine vaccine efficacy? And do you think that future trials can rely on it?
I would say absolutely. I think this is an extremely effective method. It's an extremely valuable strategy that really allows vaccines to be developed and licensed in a situation where it otherwise would be very challenging. So, for example, looking at things like HPV that are sexually transmitted, it would take an extremely long time to get efficacy data if we're giving the vaccines before the individuals become sexually active. It's not a new strategy. Immunobridging is not a new strategy. In fact, the original licensing of HPV vaccines in adolescent, that was all based on immunobridging trials. So these showed that the antibody concentrations after 3 doses in young girls was actually much higher than in young women where efficacy had been demonstrated. And then also immunobridging was used to justify in 2016, we moved from a 3-dose recommendation in individuals aged under 15 to a 2-dose, to giving 2 doses. And that was all based on immunobridging, showing that antibody concentrations after 2 doses in younger individuals were comparable to those after 3 doses in adult women. Yeah, I feel like this is a very effective method, a very valuable strategy. Another thing I would add is that in 2013, there was an expert panel convened by the International Agency for Research on Cancer and also by the U.S. National Cancer Institute to review the evidence on immunobridging and make recommendations on when these should be used. And there was a unanimous agreement that immunobridging should be used when evaluating new HPV vaccines or different dosing schedules. And in last year, a new HPV vaccine manufactured in India was approved for regulatory use on the basis of immunobridging. So it's the first new HPV vaccine to receive regulatory approval solely on the basis of immunogenicity. And, this has extremely important implications, I think, for getting new vaccines out and increasing uptake and coverage in India and elsewhere.
All these studies since the original licensure of the multi-dose regimen for HPV vaccine and then using immunobridging to move from 3 doses to 2 doses and now having efficacy from single dose vaccination and immunobridging has allowed us to support the WHO recommendation for either 1 or 2 doses. And many countries, including the UK, has moved to a single dose for HPV vaccination. And worldwide, 37 countries have moved to the strategy of single dose based on this speed of evidence. And then just to talk generally about the utility of immunobridging, other vaccines, COVID, many COVID vaccines, we still look at antibody titers for COVID, Ebola, dengue, they've all used immunobridging as a strategy to look at as a surrogate for efficacy and to make recommendations for vaccination when we don't have the time or the resources to do randomized clinical trials.
Maybe also could add that there is real world evidence to support that the immunobridging is an effective strategy because, for example, like in the UK, having moved to the 2-dose regimen after the recommendations in 2016. So in Scotland, the cervical cancer incidence and HPV infection rates have gone down tremendously. So that's real world evidence that the 2-dose strategy works, which was based on immunobridging. So the method of evaluating vaccines using immunobridging, I think has a good track record.
You mentioned in the paper, but I wanted to know, why is it of note that this trial took place in areas with both high HPV risk and also endemic malaria? Was this, the malaria in particular, a risk to the success of the trial?
So I think, first to say, I think it's important that both Doris and Kinshi took place in Africa and East Africa in particular, because this is the area with one of the highest burdens of both HPV infection and cervical cancer worldwide. So I think it was very important that we conducted both these trials in this region. Also, And many countries in this area do have malaria. So it is important to look at immune responses in areas with malaria. Malaria has been shown to negatively affect immune responses with other vaccines, such as, you know, I think, polio, tetanus, meningococcal vaccines. Malaria has been shown to have an adverse effect on the immune responses. However, we didn't consider it to be a risk in this, with the DORIS trial, because we had done, in 2007, we conducted the first, well, we were involved in the conduct of the first HPV vaccine trial in Africa. One of the sites was Tanzania Mwanza, where DORIS was conducted. And we did show then that malaria did not have any effect on immune responses. And also at the time that we were planning DORIS, the WHO was recommending research on reduced dose schedules in areas where malaria was endemic as a research priority. So I think it was important for us to look at this question.
And looking towards the future, you've mentioned the potential efficacy of using immunobridging. Are you optimistic that the WHO target of 90% of girls will be vaccinated against HPV before the age of 15 in 2030? Are you optimistic that that target could be met?
I am optimistic, seeing that we can do amazing things in health when we put our minds to it. So certainly we've seen great success with HIV, for example, where we know that we've averted more than 20 million deaths thanks to the being able to deliver antiretroviral therapy for HIV. And many people living with HIV have a near normal life expectancy. So we've seen tremendous success in infectious diseases for treatment. We know this is a one-time vaccination, so we won't need to deliver this repeatedly. We've seen success with delivering vaccination throughout COVID. Actually, one of the silver linings of COVID is how scientists and public health programmers came together in order to quickly test and have evidence-based strategies for public health, both for delivering vaccines and for testing for SARS-CoV-2. So we saw PCR testing available in many parts of the world that it wasn't before. So I think there are examples about how the WHO and the World Bank can get behind some of these big public health programs and encourage and support uptake. And of course, once we're able to vaccinate young girls under the age of 15 each year after that, we'll just be vaccinating the new cohort of 9-year-olds. So it's not a campaign that has to go on for the length of the program. So I'm optimistic because we've done big things before. I think we can do it. There are some really key areas where we need to have specific efforts. One of them is vaccine supply, and we hopefully are entering an era of new HPV vaccine supply, given other manufacturers that are making HPV vaccines. And then it's been encouraging to see programs that are starting in areas where many girls globally who are under the age of 15 live, especially in India and China and other parts of Asia. So it's been encouraging to see that. The main thing that we need is partnership. Scientists, public health programmers, advocates, people living with cervical cancer, we all need to come together in order for us to meet these targets. But I am optimistic given people who are sitting around the table.
So yeah, I would say I'm also optimistic. I feel definitely, particularly since the recommendations for the single dose, because I feel that this will greatly reduce the resources that countries need to deliver the vaccine. And as of this month, there were 37 countries who had introduced single dose. So I think this will go a long way to help alleviate, the constraints on the vaccine supply and also the obstacles to trying to deliver multi-dose schedules to young girls. The results, they're encouraging developments and the progress is in the right direction, but we shouldn't be complacent. I think it's still a challenge to meet this target. And I think it's about, rapid introduction of programs. So India is introducing, I think it's this year that their HPV vaccine program is going to be rolled out, and China also is doing it in stages. I think getting the programs out rapidly and getting coverage up rapidly will be important.
As Kathy says, this trial has demonstrated that there are the tools available to work towards global immunization against HPV. But despite the current progress, we must not fall victim to complacency. I would like to thank both Kathy and Ruwan for taking part in this discussion, and thanks to you for joining us today. You can find their full article on The Lancet Global Health, where you can also find more In Conversation With episodes, and subscribe where you usually find your podcasts.